Greetings, friends. Our theme for today's reflection is presence and non-dual consciousness, and it's the third talk in this series on non-duality. And I want to start this talk with two scripture passages that I very often refer to because I consider them foundational to the Christian contemplative journey. So the first is Genesis 28, verse 16 to 17. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. How awesome is this place! This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven." Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. It's an incredible realization to have, a real awakening moment. Surely this place is where it's at. Home, God's dwelling place, and we do not know it. As Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Thomas Merton expressed it in this way: the gates of heaven are everywhere. And Martin Laird wrote, "Union with God is not something we acquire by a technique, but the grounding truth of our lives. By sheer grace, separation is not possible. God does not know how to be absent." God does not know how to be absent. It's we who absent ourselves. And Thomas Keating wrote, "God is existence, and hence is present in everything that exists. If God is present everywhere, it follows that under no circumstances can we ever be separated from God. We may feel that we are, we may think that we are, but in actual fact, there is no way that we can ever be apart from God, even if we try." And all of these are saying that God is always at home here now. The context in whom we live and move and have our beings. And God is at home in the depths of our own beings. This is the dwelling place of God. And we explored this in some depth in the first talk in this series with that question, "Who am I?" The second foundational passage is Exodus 13, when Moses had that mystical encounter with God at the burning bush and asked God who he should say sent him. And God's response was incredibly profound. "I am that I am." This is the name Yahweh. And this is a wonderful foundational teaching to come back to again and again, this ever-present I am presence of God is here now. And so all of this is pointing us to where and how we access the presence of God and our own deepest selfhood in the present, here and now. And this is emphasized over and over by spiritual teachers. For example, Cynthia Bourgeau described that the spiritual life can only be lived in the present moment, in the now. All the great religious traditions insist upon this simple but difficult truth. When we go rushing ahead into the future or shrinking back into the past, we miss the hand of God, which can only touch us in the now. And Beatrice Bruteau wrote, "The present moment is the intersection of eternity with time, and when our consciousness is stayed on this, it rests and finds peace, because it is released from the fantasies of the ego and is in touch with reality." Kabir Helminski wrote, "Whoever makes all cares into one care, the care for simply being present, will be relieved of all care by that presence, which is the creative power." Jean-Pierre de Caussade wrote, "If we have abandoned ourselves to God, There's only one rule for us, the duty of the present moment. In this, the soul is light as a feather, liquid as water, simple as a child. And so beautifully described. In this, the soul is light as a feather, liquid as water, and simple as a child. And then Kabir Helminski described our loss of connection with presence. He wrote, "Today a rather narrow band of awareness has come to be accepted as the conventional state of consciousness. Yet all the great spiritual traditions recognize a state of consciousness that has the potential to unlock our latent human potential. It opens us to awe and wonder, and it adds further dimensions to being in this world. It goes by many names, awakening, recollection, mindfulness, remembering. I call it presence." He went on to say, "We find this state in all traditions wherever we find true reverence, an awareness of the sacred. So many of the practices of religion and spirituality can be understood as ways of requiring and developing presence." And generally, we know this, the importance of presence. But do we really know it beyond knowing about its importance? And as Helminski says in this quote, we were not taught to value presence in our traditional upbringing. And even as I speak about this, we are likely to agree with the idea of being more present. Some of us may have even made resolutions to be more present, but we are much slower to let this filter into our actual daily lives as we live them moment by moment. And similarly, we tend to think about God rather than simply being present in the moment in God. And Richard Rohr describes prayer simply as learning to be present to presence. So simple, so difficult to actually put into practice because of the habitual ways of our minds. And so we need to have tools that can help us to practice being present in our prayer, in our lives and surroundings, present in our bodies, and present to our experiences and to one another. And so practices of mindfulness, awareness of thoughts and emotions, and meditation or centering prayer are really important in this learning to be present to presence, rehabituating ourselves from being lost in our minds elsewhere, to returning again and again to the simplicity of presence. But many of us have started these practices and then we've let them fall away because they're not bringing us what we thought they would. Or we feel like we're continually failing in this task of being present. And from experience, we all know that simply sitting in and with what is feels almost impossible a lot of the time. The mind starts getting restless, questioning what we're doing, questioning the pure simplicity of just this. And this is where I find the story of the Garden of Eden so helpful. Not reading this as a historical event, but rather as a wisdom text that comments on our human condition. I think to stay with it as a literal text is completely to miss the depth of what it could be saying to us if we listen at a much deeper level. And in the story, we're told that Adam and Eve had everything they could possibly need, a natural paradise, plus open access to the presence of God, walking together in the cool of the evening. Heaven, really. Yet that voice of the tempter started dropping in those questions of doubt. Did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden? Now that's really interesting. Notice the subtle deception here, breeding that familiar sense of unfairness and discontent. Did God really say you must not eat from any tree in the garden? What God had actually said was, you are free to eat from any tree in the garden, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat from it, you will certainly die. So that twisting is really interesting. And then the tempter went on to say, you will not certainly die, for God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. And I find this such a fascinating parable of the original temptation, or the original sin, and that is the temptation to be like God in knowing good and evil. This is otherwise known as dualistic consciousness, knowing by separation, division, and judging between good and evil, what belongs and what doesn't. And this is our ordinary human consciousness that plays out again and again, and it's been developed and reinforced throughout our lives. Its basis is in discontent, that subtle voice that says, surely this can't be it. Surely if I reach for something else, I'll find the ultimate. I will become like God. And so much of our striving comes out of this kind of discontent. And the something else that we reach for could be more money, more power, more recognition, but it could also be more spiritual progress. Anything other than this, what is given here and now. And so we keep judging the moment, finding what we do have inadequate, reaching towards what we do not yet have in the hopes that that will give us ultimate fulfillment. And as the story goes on to describe, we judge each other, projecting our discontent onto one another, blaming each other for our lack of contentment. And our human condition is a massive paradox. Our discontent and our reaching out there for certainty and fulfillment, to have our eyes open to be like God in our certainty of right and wrong. This is the very thing that causes the veil of separation between ourselves and God, between ourselves and each other, and between ourselves and the already given paradise that we're in, the already given paradise of what is. And this is something to be aware of in ourselves, this tendency to find this, whatever it is, inadequate or not enough, to overlook the ordinariness of here and now. And I find it very helpful to notice this tendency in myself. And I invite you to just do this with me as a short exercise. How do you feel about this ordinary moment? About who you are right here, right now? And how life is? Where you are? And where you would prefer to be? And get in touch with whatever responses arise in you. Whatever you notice, try not to judge yourself for this. Simply be present and aware of whatever is here. Any feelings of discontent or inadequacy or any urge that is pulling you from being here now. Any reaching for something else, some place else, or to be somebody else. But just be aware of all of that. By becoming aware of these impulses in ourselves, we're breaking the power of the cycle with the simplicity of awareness of what's happening. And this is already a return to presence. As we become aware of what's happening inside of our thoughts and feelings right here, right now, from here, we can gently start opening in receptivity to whatever else is here and now. Sound of birdsong, the feeling of the clothes against our skin, the gentleness of our breath in and out, the silence underneath all of this and the spaciousness that we can start to find ourselves in when we return to simplicity of presence. Right here, right now, we are present to presence, to the never absent I am presence of God. So the practice of presence does not mean overruling our struggle with being present, but rather allowing that to be the starting point or the portal for becoming present. By being non-judgmentally aware of exactly what it is in us that is struggling or pulling us away, and then opening to that and beyond that into whatever else is present here and now, present to presence. Richard Rohr wrote, "The presence of God is infinite, everywhere, always and forever. You cannot not be in the presence of God. There's no other place to be. The only change is always on our side. God is present, but we're not present to presence. When we're present, we will experience the presence." And Kabir Helminski wrote, "Presence is the point of intersection between the world of the senses and the world of the spirit. May we never cease to discover its beauty and power." I apologize for any continuity errors at this point, but I realized that I need to add a short discussion that is necessary at the moment when so many people are suffering in our world. It feels like we're going through a wave of suffering communally. And this practice of non-judgmental presence does not mean negating suffering or trying to make ourselves buck up in difficult times. Rather, it's an invitation to be receptive to the moment, no matter the content of our experience. And sometimes our experiences are incredibly difficult, challenging, and uncomfortable. But as we open in receptivity, we open to the whole of life, whatever its shape and texture happens to be right now, daring to even stay present and grounded with the burn and jagged discomfort of it. So being present to presence is an invitation to deepening our experiential relationship with life, with what is, allowing it to be as it is. And this opens us beyond our usual defensive and constricted reactions into a more spacious, trusting relationship with life and God. And in this way, we come into a kind of harmony with life, where we are more able to flow and respond gently, wisely, and compassionately, knowing the suffering of others once we've really allowed ourselves to experience it deeply for ourselves. And this opening allows the fresh breath of the Spirit to breathe through our beings as we open more and more into this receptivity of being. Whenever we do this, we're shifting from the dualistic mindset that judges and resists the moment, finding it wanting, to the more open, vast, non-dual consciousness that is already at peace, that peace beyond understanding, knowing that we're unshakably held in God, one with God. This we come to know deeply in our beings as we shift into this open, receptive presence. And this takes time and practice because we're so habituated to avoiding, resisting, and reaching out and beyond now, here, for fulfillment. And so this is why it's often called the practice of the presence of God. And so in conclusion, I want to go back to God's name for God's self, I am that I am, Yahweh. And according to some Jewish scholars, the sound of this name is the sound of our own in-breath and out-breath. And Richard Rohr does a beautiful teaching on this, saying that every breath is a prayer. From our first intake of breath at our birth to our last exhalation at our death, every breath is a prayer. There's a beautiful sense in which God is calling to us in every breath that we breathe, calling us home, saying, I am here. I am the present one. Ruach in the breath. Already here, in every breath, in every heartbeat, come back to me here and now. The never absent I Am presence longs for us to return in quiet simplicity and trust to just this. This moment, shrouded from our reaching by its ordinariness, yet rich with beauty and sacredness if we open to whatever is here and rest into the givenness of the gift. I want to end with a delightful quote from Etty Hillesum, a Jewish mystic, and she wrote this while she was incarcerated in a Nazi concentration camp. Such words as God and death and suffering and eternity are best forgotten. We have to become as simple and as wordless as the growing corn or the falling rain. We must just be. I cannot find the right words either for that radiant feeling inside me, which encompasses but is untouched by all the suffering and all the violence. But I am still talking in much too philosophical, much too bookish a way, as if I had thought it all up just to make life more pleasant for myself. I had much better learn to keep silent for the time being and simply be.